Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yo. 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 Aubrey Edwards, Tony Schiavone, we bout to party, we bout to party. Unrestricted, got the house now, we gon' turn it up, up, bring the house down. Got that bass, bass pumping, make them bounce now. Blousing like they bossing, and the freaks are coming out now.
It's time for another edition of AEW Unrestricted. Tony Schiavone and Aubrey Edwards are with you. Hey, Aubrey.
Hey, Tony. I missed you. I love you. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. Thanks to Alex Abrahantes for stepping in for me for a few weeks. But it's great to be back. It's great to have Samoa Joe with us. Joe, how are you, buddy?
I'm excellent, man. I'm glad you're back, too. Yeah, this is much more pleasant than having Alex here. I agree. This is way better scenario.
True heel.
By the way, I just want to say that just to start out this, that Joe at one time only had a 33 1/3 chance of beating Scott Steiner.
You know,
and Scott Steiner was 66 2/3 chance.
Strong math. Strong, strong math.
Strong math.
And it's almost unbeatable. You know, we did defy the odds. We did defy the statistical odds. But when he laid it out like that, I mean, it just kind of made the struggle that much more real in people's minds. You know, I mean, the insurmountable odds that were in front of me.
You know, that damn thing stood the test of time. I mean, people still talk about that.
It did.
So, you know, I tell people, like, I was standing behind the camera as, like, Scott was kind of, like, free-forming it in his head.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of, you know, he did an earlier take, and, he was kind of getting the idea. And then, like, I think it was, like, the second he just went, I was visibly behind the camera just trying to hold my stuff together. And when it all got done, I just looked at Scott. I think I was the one.
Yeah. That was tremendous, man. I just want to hit you with that first, but I want to let you know how great it is to have you here. You made your appearance at the ROH Supercard of Honor back in Dallas not that long ago. And what a response, man. What a response for you, not only there, but your first time in Dynamite. You had to be really thrilled about that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been fortunate enough that the fans have migrated with me on my many adventures and many journeys and many companies. So, it's always good to get a warm welcome.
I'm curious what it was specifically like coming back to Ring of Honor and knowing that you have such a long storied history there. And we'll talk about that a little bit. I know I was watching it live and seeing the flames on the screen. I'm like, oh, I have an idea of who this is. And you have such a unique look about you that I think one step outside of the curtain and everybody immediately knew, like, oh my God, Joe's here. This is great. What did it mean to you to come back at that show specifically?
I think when you talk about the length of my career and, like, kind of where things started and I really came into my own, it would be in Ring of Honor. I mean, obviously, the championship reign there. And then just the incredible amount of talent that was kind of crossing paths within the promotion, whether on their way up or on their way down or somewhere in between or making a rebound. I mean, it was such an interesting place in the business at the time because really there was no alternatives. There was nowhere for anyone outside of WWE to really kind of express themselves. And it kind of was the forerunner to Impact. Or TNA at the time, and many other promotions to follow.
We're talking with Samoa Joe here on AEW Unrestricted. Tony Khan obviously reached out to you to join this company. How did that all happen?
It was a process. I was fortunate enough that even though after my WWE release, I was already kind of engaged in some outside projects that were really cool. But, you know, my agent, I think, you know, him and Tony, they kind of have a repartee. They've dealt with each other before, I believe.
Sure.
You know, they got together and started, you know, brainstorming, going back and forth. And then me and Tony got in touch. Tony's been always like right in contact with me, doing his best to get to me whenever the opportunity arose. And couple of discussions with Tony, a couple of discussions between them, and it all worked out nicely.
What was your first like meeting with Tony Khan like? Because he's a very excited guy and just yells like, let's fucking go all the time.
So I actually met Tony prior to, AEW and everything, just, backstage at a WWE show, kind of hanging out. And, you know, he's just, very cool, quirky guy, man. He just like, he's got a lot of ideas. And he's a person that I liken Tony to like an overfilled balloon where it's that all you got to do is just prick the skin and then all the ideas and all the, everything's going to come flooding out in a mass and like really high energy dude. And, seemed cool. And I mean, our talks since then have always been very, very cool. And we get along well, man, have a lot of commonality in certain things.
I know from working backstage, at that Ring of Honor show, your debut, you getting to Dallas was a challenge because of weather issues, and you did make it obviously. But that was a very challenging day because of the weather issues. But, hey, you've been in the business long enough to know that sometimes travel can be difficult.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I know, there was weather preventing jets to get into Tampa on time and
right.
A lot of mechanical issues, flights going out. And so I had to end up driving to Cross City, Florida, small little rural town in the middle of Florida to catch a private jet to get up to the show. And it was quite an escapade. The best part was, is as I arrived to the airport, I walked into this little office. This little man sitting behind the counter looked at me and I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got a jet coming in and picking up. And he just goes, well, what time? I said, well, I think 7 o'clock. And he goes, well, we close at 6, man. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, boy.
I remember Tony came to me and he said, where is Cross City, Florida? Have you ever heard of it? And I had to go on my phone, look at Wikipedia. I said, yeah, here it is. It's like southeast of Tallahassee, a little bit north of Tampa. And I said, there's really an airport there? He said, yeah, there is. So
I didn't know there was a city there, to be honest with you. So, I mean, yeah, it was quite a surprise to everybody.
That was good.
I like that the guy that lives in Florida is like, where the hell is this place? That should automatically tell you.
Yeah, I spoke to several people here and many, many people who are, I would describe as fine country folk. And even they were like, I've never heard of Cross City.
Wow. So the fact you made it is even like a testament to itself. It's like, oh, man. First, he ended up in this place that nobody believes is real.
Yeah.
Then he finally made it on a plane after they've been closed, made it to Dallas, which is like where travel goes to die and all the weather's terrible. So against all odds, you have this incredible debut. So thank you for everything that you endured because
you can thank Tony's pilots, man. They went above and beyond in trying to get down there and find me.
Yeah, they're good guys.
Okay, so show up, Supercard of Honor, and then you have your Dynamite debut against Max Caster. And then immediately go on to face Suzuki in one of the most brutal chop battles I've ever seen. I'm surprised that like your chest doesn't have a permanent hole in it, his either. And then you end up winning the television championship, which is incredible because you're still the longest reigning ROH world champion. And now you've got this television championship. How did that match all come together and what does that mean to you?
I mean, things move fast and as improbable as it seems, I liken it to much like the math Tony brought up before. I mean, we're used to overcoming kind of insurmountable and unusual calculations and odds. And I think that's kind of how the past 2 weeks have played out. I mean, came in, debuted for Ring of Honor, made my debut on Dynamite, obviously a lot of fun there and a good little opponent just to, get the blood boiling a little bit. And then, coming right in, Tony offered me the opportunity next week because, hey, I have this idea. We have Suzuki will be around. I just think it's only natural that these two forces should collide. And, I was 100% in. I said, absolutely, let's go. And a week later, here we are.
We are talking with Samoa Joe. This is AEW Unrestricted. Tony and Aubrey with you. And it's great to have Joe with our company. And I think everyone obviously knows the response he has and what he has done in this wrestling business. And Joe, for your years in Ring of Honor, you've worked with many guys who now work with us. CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, a couple, obviously Jay Lethal, who you're kind of involved with right now. So I'm sure it's good seeing guys here that you've worked with before.
I think it's a testament to kind of the influence Ring of Honor has had in the industry because, I could say that about just about any locker room I would walk into in this day and age.
Right.
I think, many of the top performers in this industry, found their way through Ring of Honor. And, I think that's why the promotion holds a real special place in my heart, I think, for a lot of fans and for a lot of the performers who spent their time there was that, it was the first true forum a lot of us had to where we could kind of go out there and be the persona and the wrestler that we wanted to be. To have that ability in this day and age, there was very few places where that could happen, where you could, really have a fan base, really go out there, you know, be the performer you wanted to be and kind of come into your own. Many of the top guys in the industry today, you know, like, and I said it at the show, you know, they came through the Ring of Honor ring. They were kind of forged there and then, you know, went on elsewhere to find greatness. So it all means a lot to me in that aspect.
Are there any of those guys that you're particularly excited about having rematches with after all these years?
I mean, obviously, you know, me and Punk have been skirting around this issue for a while, and I think we need to get it settled. You know, Danielson, you know, anytime I step in the ring with him, you know, we get down. Up and down the roster, we talk about guys who, you know, I've worked with in Ring of Honor that I'm currently on the roster with now in AEW and Ring of Honor. I mean, yeah, any one of those guys. I mean, it's just, it's wide open.
We're talking with Samoa Joe, and we are talking about his career. Actually, we're going to be talking more about his career after the break, but right now we're talking about his arrival here in AEW. And AEW Unrestricted, by the way, Tony and Aubrey with you. Joe, you've been doing some talent scouting as of late as well. Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. Before when WWE was heavily involved in their scouting department. And,
right.
You know, now kind of keep those eyes open and keep those eyes out there for a different purpose, obviously. You want to have some of the best up-and-comers coming into your company. And if I can help facilitate that for AEW, then I'd be more than happy to.
Do you like doing that? I mean, is it something that, you know, you think that...
I've learned to appreciate it and like it because of men like William Regal, who in the height of their career took time to give me advice. And
right.
Just show me a path. It wasn't, hey, I'll put in a word for you, I'll do this. It was like, no, here's the path. And if you choose to follow it, you can find success. And
right.
It's just something that's kind of missing in the industry as a whole. You know, there's just not a lot of guys who have that experience kind of going back and having honest discussions with dudes about what the industry is like, what this business really is, and breaking down the numbers and not just get kind of being grandiose and bragging about how you're awesome and this is how much you did and this and this and this. It's like, you know, every empire is built with a plan. And the problem is we don't talk about the plan enough. We just talk about the empire. So, you know, I'd like to change that. You know, anytime I can offer a word of advice to somebody young and up and coming and, you know, want to put themselves in the best possible position to succeed, which I think is vitally important to anybody in our industry, is putting yourself in a position to be successful, not just, you know, waiting for something to break or happen, is a big asset bank of our knowledge, which isn't shared enough. And I'd like to see that happen more.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah, very well said, Joe. And by the way, we're talking to Samoa Joe on AEW Unrestricted, and we'll continue talking about his early years when we continue here on, did I repeat myself, Aubrey?
Yeah, you did, but you know, you've been gone a bit, so it's fine.
Unrestricted, stay with us.
This is AEW Unrestricted. Aubrey and Tony here with the wonderful and amazing Samoa Joe. He's had a long, storied career in wrestling, and he's finally at AEW. I think it was inevitable at this point with just the amount of talent that he brings to the ring and the history he has as a performer and everything that he's going to be able to do for our roster and making us better. I know I'm personally very excited to finally get a chance to work with you and learn from you and all your experience and whatnot. So it's going to be great. We mentioned in the earlier segment, you're the longest reigning ROH champion. I think it's 645 days. What does that mean to you after all of these years to still have that record?
I'm surprised it's still standing, to be honest. I thought Jay Lethal had a shot at eclipsing that, but it's such a rarity, I think, in this industry to be able to hold a championship that long. And I think, you know, during the breadth of the reign and what we were able to accomplish, you know, we checked a lot of the boxes that we sought to check out. And, you know, I had to Gabe Sapolsky on that. You know, at the time, you know, it was a very radical idea. And, you know, he saw it through by hook or by crook, and it worked out well for us. And I appreciate him taking that gamble.
Start of your reign was back at the Night of Champions in 03, which you wrestled twice that night, we understand. I've heard guys talk about this a lot, that they used to have to wrestle twice in one night. Did that happen to you a lot?
More so earlier in my career, because, you know, a lot of times, especially in Southern California, you would get these little kind of spot fair shows. So you'd have a couple shows throughout the day. And, you know, at the time too, like I was so, you know, new in the business, like, you know, two shows a day. Awesome. You know, cool. Right. No more experience. This will be awesome. This will be great. And, you know, I rue that now because it's tough. Cause you know, we get through one, it's like, ooh,
that's
especially,
right.
With the level of competitors that you end up inevitably facing off in the ring with.
Right.
At this level. But, yeah, back then, you know, you're all gung-ho and you're all for it. You know, I've done fair shows where it'd be like three in a day, you know, and you'd be all right.
Wow.
I think everybody who's come up through the indies, it's like, oh, yeah, remember, remember back when those days were happening and very grateful for what we have now. It's like, okay, cool. I only have one match. This is great.
The worst though, and this happens more often than not, will be, hey, kind of go out there the first match and, you know, really give them a show. And then the next match, like, hey, we got to switch up things a little bit. Can you make them hate you? the same kid you just saw. Can you, I don't know, mush them in the face and kick their popcorn over.
Well, and I think for yours, it was like you had a singles match and a tag match, which is like a completely different mindset shift. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, yeah, now we just have to do this other thing. Not like I was really thinking about that at all. So testament to you, man.
That's where you hope that you're working with a lot of people who know what the hell they're doing, because it makes that whole scenario a lot easier.
Right. You made your ROH debut back in October of 2002 at Glory by Honor, the pay-per-view, in a match versus Low Ki. It was supposed to be a one-off appearance, but then you ended up getting a contract. How soon after that pay-per-view and that match did that happen?
I think immediately after the match when I walked in the back.
Go through the curtain. Hey, do you want to work here?
It was funny. And I very much understand the time, but like, you know, ROH is very hot for the indies, and it was really kind of one of the few places to work. So everybody was kind of beating down the door trying to get in, especially in the Northeast. And I was a West Coast guy. And, you know, independent promotions, young, starting out, you know, that flight from Los Angeles, a lot of money, you know, for a company to really eat every week or every single show. So,
right.
And at the time, Christopher Daniels was their regular flyout from. So that's what they had budgeted. The Christopher Daniels West Coast ticket, they had that budgeted. They definitely didn't have a second ticket budgeted. So, but after that match, I think they found room in the budget. So it was pretty nice. And, you know, it was all history after that.
Low Ki was the first opponent. I know Low Ki, interesting guy. For a first opponent.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and a very, you know, obviously very intense individual. And
no question.
Like in there and mix it up and stuff. So,
right.
And it just kind of made it easier for me because, like, you know, that's very much how I am. You know, I don't shy away from the impact and the violence. And, you know, when you get those two elements together, you know, usually somebody's entertained. You know? So,
absolutely.
You know, like I said, you know, just after that match and being in there with him and trying to give them a very clear picture of what I do and what I'm capable of. And they were very impressed. And hey, we started the fire that night.
That's right.
So speaking of violent matches, back in 2004, you had to defend the world title against Homicide, mm-hmm. which I think this is the one where I ended up bringing a fork to. Did you have any say in the fact that it's like, oh, we're just going to keep putting you in all these violent matches with these super hardcore guys? Like,
No, but at the same time, it's like, that's, you're the top guy, you know, that's what you're expected to do. You know, we have to, and that's very much how Ring of Honor was at the time. You know, it was very, very predicated on whether we drew or not, whether we survived or not, you know, it was directly linked to our survival. So, you know, it's like, if I wanted to work and I wanted my boys to work and we were, you know, like I said, it was a very big locker room. And I think many of the people would say in there at the time, a very big family. It's like, yeah, okay, absolutely. Let's do this. Let's do this here. Let's do this there. You know, it was anything just to keep momentum going and keep the company moving forward. And, that was my responsibility. So it was like, it wasn't a matter of whether it was I had a say or not. It was a matter of whether I wanted to take on the task or not. And that was what was put in front of me, and I was all for it.
We're talking with Samoa Joe. Joe, I wanted to kind of move back a little bit. Talk about your when you first started in wrestling. When did that all start? When did your interest in wrestling begin?
Interest in wrestling probably was, you know, throughout my life. It was one of the few things I think universally as a family we could watch around the house together. Simply because we all love different sports teams and had very heated rivalries whenever it came to discussing anything sports. Any sports matters at the dinner table were much like politics in other houses. I mean, we're very passionate and very, very split. But wrestling was one of the few things that I think we would all kind of sit down and watch together. And for us, my family ran a Polynesian dance troupe. You know, we toured the world. We were constantly on the road. So the gig life was already kind of inherent in what I did.
Sure.
And I very much understood it. My family had a very good understanding of it. So pitching becoming a pro wrestler to them, or that I was going into the pro wrestling field, the discussion was there is they pay. Yeah. All right. You know, and that was
right.
Kind of the,
yeah.
And, you know, honestly, and people say, oh, you know, wrestling is dangerous to the care. I mean, you understand I came from a family of fire knife dancers, you know, we all had third, second degree burns going into, you know, coming out of high school. So it was like, it might've been a safer career choice actually for me at a certain point. So it was just a very natural progression, obviously. Growing up in the show, being in front of people was never an issue for me. You know, kind of was very, very natural. And pro wrestling, I always say, was my second career in show business because my first career, you know, was from when I was 5 years old till I was in my early 20s. And then from there, I left and I became a professional wrestler. So
right.
There's never been a time at one time or another where I've been on stage or have been in front of people. So, yeah, it's my lot in life.
And I know, like most of the wrestlers, you live in the Florida area now, but you grew up in the Southern California and lived there most of your life, right?
Yeah, and honestly, we lived kind of back and forth between Florida and California, but now I'm hiring in Florida because obvious all the craziness in the world just made it easier.
Yeah.
Growing up in Southern California, I wouldn't change it for the world, especially for the time I grew up in Southern California and, you know, the experiences and the people and obviously kind of growing up in a crazy fire knife dancing hula show with where you're kind of around the world all the time. It was a unique upbringing and a very, very fun one.
I want to know more about this fire knife dancing. How does one start fire knife dancing other than having your family thrust one in your hand?
In my experience, your father takes you out in the back. First, he hands you a large knife, which he teaches you how to spin that safely. And then after that, the knife is then lit on fire. And then, you know, there's some protocol stuff. And, you know, basically it's a lot of small burns and little ouchies here and there. And you do your best not to set your hair on fire and not make him mad in the process. Yeah, it's unusual to say the least.
Is this something that was handed down from a generation? Did his father do this too?
Oh, yeah. And for my father too, like my brother, you know, I think one time easily is probably one of the greatest knife dancers in the world. My father was hired by Walt Disney. He produced a show in Disneyland at the time of the Tejas Terrace for years. And, you know, he was one of the innovators and one of the first guys to bring fire knife dancing as an entertainment capacity to the United States. Yeah, it was a family tradition. My brother still runs the show to this day.
Wow.
My nephews and nieces, my nephews especially, they're all still fire knife dancing. They're still competing and doing everything too. So, yeah, they stay active.
Where are they located if anybody wanted to go see them?
Southern California. Tupor Productions out of Southern California.
Awesome. That's fantastic. So you're no stranger to the gig lifestyle and whatnot. You enter wrestling. I know you spent some time in Japan, I think with Noah and Pro Wrestling 01. Talk about that a little bit.
So Japan kind of was my initial first big gig, even before Ring of Honor. And my first kind of, when I realized, oh, this is what I want to do for a living. You know, I went over for Pro Wrestling 01, who at the time was under Shinya Hashimoto, who was passed, unfortunately. And it was a great experience. But the only thing that was usual is kind of a half shoot fight, half pro wrestling promotion. So, I mean, a lot of times I remember doing, you know, road shows and they're just like, hey, it's you versus Gerard Gordeaux, you know, the guy who ripped the dude's eye out in MMA and, you know, is a Dutch kickboxing champion and has no idea how to go in there and do anything but kick people's heads off. And you're like, oh, sweet. You know, yeah, that happened a few times or, you know, just local rings, pancrase, judo guys, all kinds of stuff. So it was very much a kind of on the job learning experience, but a valuable one for me.
Joe, you've had a couple of, we've talked about some notable matches early in your career in Ring of Honor. Also, the ROH World Title Classic in 2004 against CM Punk, the 2006 Fight of the Century against Bryan Danielson. We're talking about 60-minute time limits. Mm-hmm. That's got to be difficult to prepare yourself for and to pace yourself.
The biggest difficulty is kind of getting over the mental stigma of it. I know for me, like, you think, oh, man, it's hard to really go those lengths and to keep the crowd engaged, and keep everybody, you know, keep everything going.
Sure.
And really, that's the biggest thing. And then once you're in there, and it's funny, I think after the 15-minute mark, you kind of just fall into, your body kind of falls into a rhythm. You fall into a rhythm and like you're in, you're locked in, at least for me. And like I said, when you're in the ring with guys who are talented, both of those individuals, it makes that 60 minutes move at a blistering pace, you know? So it was something that kind of was lost with the annals of time and television, you know, to be able to kind of do that in a 60-minute match or have that much time in a modern era was such a rarity and such a cool experience. And they were fun matches.
And we're talking about individual matches and opponents, but are there any matches from your time at Ring of Honor, even from your time at TNA, that really stand out to you as some of your favorites or most memorable?
I always say my most personal favorite matches always usually happen on house shows, just because it's just this way more freeform environment and things happen. There's a lot of organic things in the crowd. But I mean, time in Ring of Honor, I mean, obviously, you know, Kobashi, the Punk matches, anything with Danielson. And then when I got to TNA, you know, AJ, anything I do with AJ, anything I do with Daniels, those were like matches that I always remember fondly. But it was also because, you know, all those people are friends of mine. They're all, you know, people I'm close to in life and who I hope well for outside of the ring, maybe not so much inside of the ring, but that added kind of bonus is what kind of makes those matches memorable for me. So that's definitely the biggest thing.
You know, we've talked so much about your Ring of Honor time. Talk a little bit about your time at TNA. How was that for you?
It was fun. It was a great time. You know, obviously, I would say that was, you know, kind of more of my national exposure occurred. And
right.
Kind of the greater breadth of America got to see me and see what I do. It was enjoyable because the people that I had the chance to work with at the time, you know, they're all people either, you know, I had known in Ring of Honor and had good relationships with already, or they were new up and coming guys who like were really hungry and like open-minded as far as like what they wanted to see in a wrestling ring, and wanted to push the envelope and do things different. Those types of people are infectious. You know, it's hard not to, you know, be enthusiastic and want to work with them when they're, you know, ready to kind of go out there and try new things.
We're talking to Samoa Joe here on AEW Unrestricted. Absolutely storied career, and I feel like you're just getting started, man, even after everything you've already done. Coming up, we have lots and lots of fan questions. People are so excited to talk to you. This is AEW Unrestricted. Aubrey and Tony talking to Samoa Joe, recent signee to AEW. Total badass. Just, I'm ready to see him absolutely kill people. This is exciting. We have lots of fan questions from Twitter. First one we have from James Stewart. Who's at the top of your list of talent that you'd like to compete against at AEW?
I mean, really, you throw a rock, you hit somebody in the locker room. I mean, it's a matchup. AEW is really tough because, like I said, there's just so many individuals that are out there. And I've always kept an open, you know, hey, anytime, any place, anybody, anywhere, any way you want it. Like, let's go. I mean, let's stay off the dream matches. It's a lazy question. They all can get it.
That's a great attitude. It really is. Anybody, let's get it. I appreciate that, Joe. I really do. Ed Brody Cole wants to know about, it says, ask Joe about voicing King Shark in the Suicide Squad game.
Awesome experience. You know, Suicide Squad coming out next year. Big game from Rock City Studios, mostly known for their Batman games, which are all incredible. Yeah, it's really cool to be voicing a DC character and kind of bring it to life, especially one that's kind of found so much love in recent years with the Suicide Squad movie. And I just hope I uphold the legacy and I make fans happy because it's a very, very fun project to do. And I'm having a blast doing it.
Speaking of games, you have a question from UNG. What games have you been playing lately? And will we see you on our AEW arcade Twitch stream?
I have no idea on the Twitch stream as I'm just learning about it right now. And
I'll talk to Uno. We'll get you on. It'll be great.
Yeah. What I'm playing right now. Let's see here. Elden Ring.
Oh my God.
Finished that out last week. So we got that done. Ruin your life if you do start playing.
You finished it.
You finished Elden Ring?
Yeah, I did.
Holy hell.
Yeah. We finish things over here. You know, we get it done. Yeah. No broken builds. Okay. You know, we did straight up a real build, not no hyper super magic build. No.
Wow.
Finished that. So I'm kind of out of that. Been messing around with Tiny Tina just because I like the Borderlands games. And, I mean, that's about it right now. I mean, obviously, I'll jump in some Warzone here and there whenever I'm feeling froggy. But, yeah, that's kind of what's been taking up my time lately.
Wow, big props for finishing Elden Ring.
Yeah.
Because I just like, I went, nah, the hell with this.
Let me put it this way. I got frustrated with it. I put it down for about a week and a half. And then I had like a really intense 3 days where I couldn't be anywhere. And, yeah, we got into it.
Oh, good. Well, congrats on that. Dennis Dirty Work wants to know, how has your in-ring style changed over the years? First a run of ROH compared to now?
I don't know. You tell me. I mean,
the logical thing is, you know, you're older, and as you get older, you know, you change a little bit, right? I mean, that's kind of the way it is.
I stopped doing a knee drop. That was like a absolute, I needed to change just because I knew I was wrecking my knee every time I did it. But, I mean, outside of that, just making smarter decisions as far as like what we're doing and where we're going. And I mean, that's pretty much it.
Got a question from Real Steve V. I was relatively new to watching TNA wrestling when Kurt Angle arrived. The initial meeting between you two is one of my top five greatest moments ever. And did you know that it was going to be so intense at the time it was happening?
Yes, I did. No doubt. Because Kurt was already intense, like walking through the door. And I was like, oh, this guy's really hyped up here. Here we go. You know, so I knew it would be every bit intense. You know, Kurt's an intense individual. Like many of the guys who have an extensive amateur background, there is an Olympic level. And I mean that because, like, you know, talking to guys like Bobby Lashley and just a lot of like really high level collegiate, amateur, whatever you want to call it, wrestlers, most of these men have tremendously intense, focused mindsets. you know, some say it's grilled into them at the training center, the Olympic training center. Some say, you know, just through the program and how they come up, what they do. But, you know, they're very, very focused, very, very intense. Worrying about Kurt being there and hyped is never an issue. And I'd say the same for, you know, many people of his ilk.
Joe, you've already kind of touched on this with your family, but Ablamos Pro Wrestling wants to know, can you tell us about how life was growing up in Huntington Beach?
It was great. You know, Huntington Beach was a big melting pot of a place with, you know, a lot of different cultures and a lot of different great food. And, you know, my neighborhood was just a really fun time, man. You know, I was very fortunate to grow up in the area in the time that I did. What more can be said? You know, you could surf in the morning, snowboard in the afternoon, and, you know, be back on the beach at night for a bonfire. So, I mean, it was a great life, and I enjoy it. And I enjoy Southern California very much.
Do you see yourself moving back?
We'll see. Honestly, at this point, kind of where I live and where I go is more predicated on whatever projects I'm working on right now. So I don't have much of a say in it. It's just, but I can definitely see it probably happening, at least in a short-term capacity.
We have a question, another Huntington Beach question from Slack and Sadie Meatloafs. These names, man, they're freaking crazy. One of the things I miss most about living in Huntington Beach is Lucy's Deli and the best damn Italian bread ever. What's your favorite place in Huntington Beach to grab a bite to eat?
Ooh, Mother's Market, Indo Beach Boulevard, probably the best breakfast and lunch. Actually, it's a health food spot. Like, it's been there forever. And I'm not like the biggest, super plant vegan vegetarian guy, but they do have a really great, like, they call it the Baja Surfer, kind of a simple beans and rice kind of tortilla thing meal in the morning that all the surfers used to eat before they go out to get the morning sets. And man, I don't know what the heck they put in there. You know, they say there's no meat or whatever in there, but damn, it tastes good as hell.
Let's go back to talk about video games, because Leon Collins wants to know, being a big gamer, do you plan to brainstorm with two of our most important gamers, a girl that you're looking at right now, Aubrey Edwards, Kenny Omega, about the new video game that's in the works? Do any brainstorming on that? They want to know.
So the simple and uneducated answer is, oh, yes, absolutely. The real answer is I've been involved in game development for, you know, I think 5 or 6 games now at various different levels and capacities and very different levels of involvement. And one of the most important things about developing a game is a unified, singular vision for what the game should be.
Boom.
That being said, more voices in the room, even though they're awesome gamers and they have great ideas and they're great people, isn't necessarily best for the product. So I think, unless I was solicited, I like to keep the paint in the hands of the painters and let them come up with what they come up with.
Nicely said.
This is a podcast about Joe, but I could probably go on for about 20 minutes about why design by committee does not work in game development.
It doesn't. It I've seen it kill games.
I have too.
And, you know, I have friends who are developers. In fact, I have a lot of friends who are developers who are currently involved in decision by committee games. I feel for them because the things they say to me, I mean, a therapist would pay a lot of money to have to deal with.
Wow.
Right. It's like there's idea guys don't really exist. Like, you got to be able to do something and implement something. But like, yeah, it's like, no, you have to have that unified vision in order to make something great. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of needs to fall in line with that. It's like, oh man, I'll shut up. I could go on for days about this kind of shit.
Well, before you hit the next question, Aubrey, the same could be said about wrestling creativity.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, really, it could.
Oh, and creativity in general. Now, you know, like I said, whether it be a painter or a sculptor, I mean, listen, I think collaborative art can be awesome, and I've seen it be awesome, but it takes a tremendous amount of synchronicity between those people collaborating, not just, hey, you're a great idea person. Let's see if this meshes. And rarely it does.
Right.
I liken it to the Lakers super teams. You know, every time they try to build a super team over in LA, it falls apart. You know, so.
Right. Exactly.
Case in point. Come on, man. Let's go, Lake Show.
All right. We got a question from Dragon Master Adam. I want to know your opinion on the Forbidden Door, as you said you previously weren't a fan of it.
Yeah. And I'd stand by my comments.
Dang.
Well, here's the thing is like, so maybe my definition of Forbidden Door and yours is different, but mine was always WWE.
Right.
Okay. That door's still not open. And, you know, if you're talking about co-promoting with like New Japan and other promotions and Ring of Honor, okay, that's fine. But to me, that's never been considered a forbidden door. You know, like I co-promoted with Ring of Honor and New Japan years ago. You know, we did the best Super Junior. Didn't turn out well. Wasn't a good collaboration from that experience. That's what I based my experiences on. You know, and even to this day, when you talk about forbidden door, you know, I'm talking about it from a standpoint of where I'm at and where the peoples are at. So is that the door that's currently up is what adds value to a lot of the wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, even though I've dealt with Tony and I have a very different feeling now that I'm dealing personally with Tony and talking business about how he handles himself and what his vision is, which is very noble. And I'm surprised to hear it. But, you know, when the promoters start working together, does that usually work out for the wrestlers? Like, I'm just talking about from a labor standpoint, you know, like there's value in the exclusivity that's going on right now. Let's not deny it. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, this may blow up a narrative, but like, that's how I understood it.
Right.
Like, you know, like I said, I'm not on the internet every day, like catching on all the buzzwords and like getting with the revolution and stuff. And, you know, I think like the arguing between the AEW and the WWE fans is ridiculous.
Oh,
watch pro wrestling.
I hate it.
You don't need to like dunk on this dude. It's you taking your ego and taking something you have nothing involved with and like trying to start a conflict with something else. I mean, watch what you watch, enjoy what you want to enjoy. But hey, I'm always going to be pro value for wrestlers.
Right.
No matter what. I'm always going to be pro. Hey, wrestlers should be getting the top dollar, getting paid the most they should possibly be paid and be valued at the highest level. And I will never apologize for that opinion. And I will never go back on that opinion.
Hell yeah.
And if guys take that as like some shot, like, oh, well, now you're here and now you sold out and your opinion's not. No, my opinion is still the same. And as far as I see, that door's still up. But there's benefits to that door being up and there's benefits to that door being open. That door can't be open, but listen, there's got to be a lot of change industry-wide before I'd be comfortable with it as a performer and from where I'm standing as a entertainer who's been in this business, who has actually dealt with the financials and knows what this business is about.
Right.
So, I mean, I know you have your glorified view of what this war is. You think we line up on each side and we say, ah, but the real war is us trying to entertain you people, not this ridiculous between you all, you know? Like,
hell yeah.
Joe, very well said, my man. We appreciate that. Really do. JRocket121 wants to know, did you have any input on your AEW theme music?
I didn't. I did not.
Whoa.
But I thought you did, you know, you did a tremendous job with what he was given. Ruckus.
Yeah, Mikey.
Like I said, I'm still relatively new. I've only met with the company probably 3 times now, so I'm still getting to know everybody and everything. But I was just surprised that they had the track done so quickly. So, yeah, all good.
Yeah, it's crazy. Mikey Ruckus can turn around something in like 24 hours. Like, hey, Sting's going to be here. Can you make something that's like legendary and super like impressive for this guy? It's like he does good shit. It's really awesome. Personally, I'm very interested in this question. Thirsty Monkey asks, what are your thoughts on the Joe's Gonna Kill You chant?
Cool. I mean, I don't know what more there is to say about that. You know, you're going to be like, well, I have very complex emotions about it. You know, on the one hand, I do love the sport. On the other hand, I mean, geez, I mean, they're expecting a lot of me. But like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's cool, dude. Yeah, it's awesome.
James Hickman. Wow, how about this? Thank you for having just a real name for a handle. James Hickman on Twitter wants to know, what was it like facing the legendary Kobayashi?
Awesome experience. You know, he's one of those athletes that has an aura, has a presence, and he brings it definitely into the ring with him, whether he likes it or not. You know, just an incredible athlete. I mean, it was definitely one of the highlights.
Question from Eastwood. What are you listening to right now? Any sort of music or podcasts or...
Oddly enough, my music tastes are very, very wide and varied. I found a psychedelic 70s cumbia playlist that I just like play in the background. I have no idea why.
Wow.
But that's pretty cool lately. But other than that, I mean, yeah, you know, my normal bevy of hip hop and punk rock is usually what is on my playlist. But the psychedelic cumbia playlist, you can find it on, I think you can find it on Spotify and iTunes or whatever. And it's definitely been nice background music while I'm doing stuff around the house.
All right. Well, I'm going to check that out. Joe, thanks, brother. It's great having you here. It really is a great interview. We learned a lot about you, and we appreciate you and what you've done in the business, and look forward to a lot more great things from you in the weeks and years and months to come. Thanks, buddy.
Right on, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. By the way, you can follow Samoa Joe on Twitter and Instagram, at Samoa Joe. You can listen and follow to this podcast, which is called AEW Unrestricted, for free at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And check out the video episodes on YouTube. Just got to search AEW Unrestricted. Aubrey, the rest is yours.
You can watch Dynamite on TBS on Wednesdays. You can watch Rampage on TNT on Fridays. You can watch Elevation Monday and Dark Tuesday, both on YouTube. We're taking over. You can watch wrestling all the time. We've got a lot of it. We've got awesome people on the roster. As you can see, Joe wants to work with all of them. So watch them. It's great. Awesome. And of course, this is AEW Unrestricted. Tony Schiavone and Aubrey Edwards here. Thank you so much for listening.
Come on, throw your hands up. Let me see you. Unrestricted.